Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, we'd like to welcome you to Missing Pages of History, a program that is dedicated to serving the underserved communities. As always, it is a delight to come into your home this evening and to share with you information that we can use to make us a better people and a better community. As always, with our Missing Pages of History analysts and contributors, we would like to start off and share some news with you in terms of Pomona, North Carolina. Mr. Emmanuel, we'd like to welcome you to Missing Pages of History. And for this segment, we can talk about what's up in the Nick of our woods. And will you share some information with our people, Mr. Emmanuel? What's up in the Nick of our woods from North Carolina?
Well, there's quite a few things I want to talk about. One is the crisis in Detroit. Some people don't know about this, but 17,000 households do not have water in Detroit. And that is a crisis. People can't cook the food. And what it entails is you can't make baby formulas. People can't take their medication. They can't take baths. So when you put all this, I can name quite a few line items that affect you when you don't have any water. They're behind in their bills only because of, you know, the bankruptcy of the city of Detroit. And but just amazing. And so I think most of the bills are 90 days or longer, and the average bill has gone up 119% in the last 4 or 5 years. So, again, what is that I know it's a crisis, but should the government sort of come in and help them out to pay these bills, or what should be done? Now, cutting the water off, and some people are, you know, they got patients, this, that. So the water they're not cutting off. All the bills in the suburban area, people haven't paid. The corporations, people haven't paid. They have built a stadium there, $500 million. They haven't paid. So now you look at, again, who are they basically? It's the inner city. Most of the people that live there, out of jobs, unemployment, this type of thing. So, of course, you get this. And people, you buy food opposed to paying your water bill. I have a solution for it. I think there, I don't know where to put the president to a certain thing where, you know, you do an executive order to pay the bills of this type of thing. It is a crisis. But the governor of Michigan is the one that's ordering this. It's not something to do with the mayor. Nothing to do with this, the city council, you might say, the city council of Detroit, but it's to do with the legislative branch of Michigan and the governor. They can compel this, not to, you know, but the ones they didn't cut off were the ones, people who are basically from paraplegics and people that are on dialysis, this type of thing. They can't cut these people off water because, again, that's the fine print that people don't read sometimes, but that is really concerns me when of 17,000, they're cutting off, I think, 4,000 people per month. So it'll be 21,000 next month. And the number is steady going up. And again, there's some corporations owe bills that are $500,000 haven't paid their bill. They're keeping the water in certain places on regards they paid their bill or not. The sports at Joe Louis Arena, they owe. And they haven't cut their water off. They're not paying the bill. So I guess what's going on in Detroit is what brings this on is people are not going to some of the concerts, events there. They're not filling Joe Louis Arena up. So in turn, they got to pay the employees. They got to pay everybody. So the thing they're not going to pay is basically is the water bill. They're not paying the water bill, so they owe the water bill, but they're not cutting theirs off. So I'm not saying trying to be partial here, this or that, but again, seems like suburban area, the corporations, again, they're not cutting their water off. So right now they've cut off over 17,000 people water off in the city of Detroit, and you see the reasons why. I want to just hit a little bit on what happened over Ukraine and Russia, the plane that went down, the 777, that's still on the on an investigation. That was a terrible catastrophe, and that's a global type thing. So we have to look at that as what is going on, what happened there. That was a guided missile. They travel very, very fast. I'm very familiar with them. They can go as many as 10,000 feet per 10,000 feet per minute. I mean, this is, and the one they use is actually more powerful than that. That was a land missile that, and that this missile can get to 33,000 square, it's 33,000 miles up in the air in about 30 seconds. So I don't think the Russian rebels did this. I think the weaponry is too sophisticated for them to understand what goes on with that thing. So just looking at that as an investigative point, all these people died, 80 children, 183 Dutch people died from the Netherlands. And the main thing on this airplane, there were humanitarian people. Hey, one of the foremost scientists is actually trying to cure AIDS. He's working on that. He died in this crash. And about 100 more people was doing experiments with AIDS. So this is really, really something different. I have no idea what happened, what made people do that. And the black box will tell us a few things probably, but also radar with some of the telephonic stuff that just transpired, that was transferred over the airways will tell us exactly how they identified this plane. And according to what I've read, that the person on the other end of the light said this is a transport plane. They knew it was a passenger plane before they shot it down. So that's going to be really going to be, that's no doubt what happened. And they have that voice who said that. So, but that's another thing that concerned me a little bit. And also LeBron James going back to Cleveland. I thought that was outstanding. He held the NBA world in hostage with nobody moving, nobody doing anything. That he did what he needed to do, and no one was dictating to him what he was going to do. Speculation, all this stuff came out for a week or two, whatever. He waited like he's supposed to do. He's a businessman, not only a basketball player. They look at us sometimes as only a basketball player. This is a businessman and having to be playing basketball and play it at his highest level. So I'm happy that went down the way it did, that no one dictated to him what he's going to do. He didn't get brainwashed with people telling him what to do. And again, he owns his own company. He has his own jet plane. He's worth $300 million playing basketball. So you don't make that much playing ball. So he's a great businessman. He only makes $20 million playing basketball. The other $280 million is coming from doing business stuff. So let's give credit to where due. He's a great businessman. But those three things sort of got me a bit sort of just concerned. And also immigration. Immigration reform should have been done quite some time ago. So that's the crisis at the border. The president went down to visit the governor of Texas, a very inept governor of Texas, very inept. And he wanted the National Guard and all this craziness. We don't need that at the moment. All you got to do is secure the borders, reform the, what we need to do, because without immigration, this wouldn't even be a country. What it is, everybody here, immigrants, except for the native Indians. Everybody are immigrants, and we should look at it like that. But once they're powerless, once the power and make the ones who were in power, make them powerless. The native Indians, they were in power one time, the Cochises and the Bald Eagles, were, the different names they had, the Indians. And like I say, when you look at from the beginning of history, when they say that we discovered America, how can you discover something when somebody's already here? So you can't discover something when somebody's already here. So you're an immigrant, and make it sure of that. But again, they always flip the coin and get on the other side of the coin. And, of course, they got the propaganda meter, and they got the newspapers and media to make sure that what they're saying is based on what they're saying. They're calling other people illegal aliens. Well, are you illegal aliens? Everybody illegal aliens? We came without knowing, basically. So it's a different ball game with us crossing the border. We came in ships. We didn't cross the border. So it's a different ball. Everybody crossed the borders. But again, I look at that immigration reform as a huge thing that I've been looking at. I'm trying to follow that as much as I can. And the last thing I want to talk about is minimum wage. We got to get the wages up. We know the system is rigged, big time. And we have to unrig the system, or we got to expose the system that's rigged. And look like we seem not to want to do that. My television show coming up is going to be on the rigged system. I'm going to expose the rigs in the system, how it got rigged from the beginning. It's historical, and like I say, it's concrete, and how we change it. It's very difficult to change with the legislature we have now. Very difficult, because again, how do you beat the lobbyists? How do you beat the lawyers in Washington, D.C.? With the money there, you got the power and the privilege. They have all of that and the opportunities, and people that's trying to fight them don't have that. So again, you're fighting a way uphill battle because you're fighting against the power, and you're fighting against the people who in Washington, D.C. that can afford the lobbyists, that can afford the congressmen, that all everybody's getting paid to make sure things go a certain way, because you're soon to be a minority. You have to make sure you do what you need to do. Like I say, it's like South Africa, where the minority, they rule the majority. 2% rule the 98%, and they rule it with money, with weaponry, things they rule it with. And it's going to be very difficult to overcome that. And what I said was going to be the last thing I'll talk about, I'm going to talk about the infrastructure. Again, 3 years ago, President Obama had, we had a huge book. I think the book was about 2 inches thick, how to make economic growth through infrastructure to repair our highways and bridges and all of this type of stuff we need to get done. And every time these bills came up to do that, transportation, this type of thing, these bills always passed. There was never hesitation passing these bills to keep the infrastructure going, especially the transportation system, the roads and the highways. This now becoming a stalwart in Congress all of a sudden. Never has happened before. And this creates jobs. And go back to minimum wage, creating jobs, paying them more money, you buy more products, it makes the economic growth grow. And the poor people become mainly, you might say, lower middle class, or to mid-middle class, and the middle class become a little bit higher middle class, but we got money, economic barriers. For as money concerned, everybody grows. You grow from the top. But again, we look at it a certain way. If you don't increase the minimum wage, have been raising over 20-some-odd years. And again, the poverty level at the moment of households right now, $32,000 African-Americans, $33,000 a year. I mean, two people working now. It's Hispanics, $55,000 European Americans, $55,000, and most of the time, the $55,000, one person just working that particular household, because the kids are being, been mined by their mothers. They're not working. Where in the household of African American Hispanics, both people work just to make the $33,000. They can buy an automobile, so they can get forward and back to work. So it's very difficult. So when I look at it, the poverty level should be what we need to be at, which need to be at about $55,000 a year for people working, two people working in the household. So those are the kind of things I look at. If you're making $33,000 for two people, that's not including taking taxes out now. This is just, this is just gross. This is not net. $33,000 for African Americans average in a two-hole household. And this came from, of course, from the IRS, from the survey was taken, of what goes on in a household. And basically, almost 60% of in the white population, just one person work if they have children. And with a black household, both people are working, and they got to hire a babysitter to keep the children. So you see, just so much disparity, and it's pathetic. But those are things that concern me. That's what happened with the neck of my woods.
Okay, so listen, audience, you're listening to Missing Pages of History. Emmanuel out of North Carolina has gave a perspective on what is going on in the neck of his woods, and we'll now move on to the city of brotherly love, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We'd like to bring in Macau. Welcome you to Missing Pages of History, and Macau, What do you have for our audience today in terms of what's going on in the neck of your woods?
Peace. This is Mikhail here in Philadelphia. We've been experiencing some very nice weather lately, and that's about the best thing we've got to say about Philadelphia for the moment. Well, currently we are still struggling with the school situation in terms of financing it, and the kind of remedies that the city council and mayor have been coming up with are kind of weak, in my opinion. They're talking about a cigarette tax, $2 on a pack of cigarettes, which is something like what New York City is doing. However, I don't believe they're financing their education system on that. And there's some other initiatives in terms of tax on the by the drink and a lot of other kind of minor things that they're hoping would fill the gap. But for something as important as the education of the Philadelphia citizens, the youth here, it seems that something more substantial is necessary. The problem, as far as I can tell, is that the legislators and the politicians in general are afraid of one thing, and that's raising taxes. And their mandate to educate the school-age children in the city area requires that these taxes must be initiated. Otherwise, we're going to have to watch the rest of this system fall. It's been deteriorating for quite some time now, and I would say that's primarily because of the charter schools. Not that the charter schools are a bad thing. They have some very good charter schools, and they've had some poor ones. However, the population of the public school has been siphoned slowly into the charter school systems. So we have quite a few large buildings built in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, and 60s, but there are not enough students to fill the entire school. So that's the dilemma that we're dealing with. Fortunately, at this point, it's summertime, and the majority of children are not quite in the classrooms. We are looking at different programs in the area to occupy the children's time, and we're hoping that with the assistance of other community groups, Missing Pages of History will be able to support those kinds of programs. We have some sports programs that we're working on, and we'd like to see about getting some educational, summer educational programs, especially in terms of the basic math and reading skills, as well as maybe a little history on the side.
Okay, and we also would like to bring in June, also looking at the city of Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love. June, what's going on in the neck of your woods up there?
Well, good afternoon, listeners. I don't have to report today, but I do want to mention that as last Thursday, President Obama was in Wilmington, Delaware, where we actually witnessed the signing, or I did, witnessed the signing of President Obama signing a bill to build the American Investment Initiative. And pretty much he was there along with the workers who was working on the I-495 corridor to rebuild the bridges. And he's trying to bring to the American public the awareness that it is time for us to take note and for Congress and everyone to back him in pushing this initiative, because a lot of our infrastructure throughout the United States is falling apart. And so it was great to see that he's moving things forward. And in him doing so, by moving this initiative forward, he has created lots of jobs, and it will continue to create jobs for the American public.
Okay. We now going to move from Philadelphia to the capital of the South. When we say the capital of the South, they say the South shall rise again. I never was quite sure what we meant by that, but maybe we'll discuss that a little bit before this program go on. We have with us Susie. Welcome to Missing Pages of History, Susie. What's going on in the neck of your woods?
Yeah, basically here in Richmond, there are several things that's going on. One is the issue with the bicycles, which they want to actually take away lanes from certain streets to allow access for bicycle riders, which a lot of the neighborhoods are concerned about. because of the issue that a lot of times the actual bicycle riders don't actually follow the laws as they are now, and thinking that this will be giving them a leeway to not following them even greater. And the next issue that we have going on, the mayor of the city of Richmond has once again brought up the issue of having the ballpark, instead of going to the Shaco Bottom, now he's proposing for it to go on the boulevard, which there hasn't been much opposition to the boulevard at this time because of the fact the original ballpark is actually on the boulevard. This would just be within that same vicinity. So I think but we still have other groups that are still fighting. They even took out a $4,000 ad to fight against having the ballpark to return as original to the Shaco Bottom area, which has a lot of controversy because of the slave trail and everything that's located in that area. And that's pretty much the issues that's going on in the city of Richmond as of today.
Speaking of Richmond, Virginia, now one thing I would like to add to this, what's going on in Nickelback Woods, I noticed as I traveled through Richmond, I noticed the various last new schools that they have built. They seem to have one thing in common, and I'm going to raise this question with my listening audience in terms of where y'all are located at, and I'd like for y'all to weigh in. Now, for our listening audience, our phone line is now open at 818-337-0016. To 818-337-0016. Call in. We'd like for you to have the opportunity to fill in our missing pages of history and for you to share with our people in terms of what's going on in the neck of your woods. The purpose of this program, this organization, is to become an active member of giving out positive information on our people and those underserved communities so we can reduce better quality of activities that will make our people respond in a more dignified and productive way. So right now, speaking of education, schools, and everything, I know there's an observation in Richmond, and I'm wondering if that's happening in North Carolina, Philadelphia, California, wherever. This is one of the things I noticed. I have a chance to observe and go through some of the new schools. Recently in Richmond, over in the eastern part of Richmond, which they call the East End, they created a new school in the name of Martin Luther King Jr. Middle School. I believe they spent about close to $6 million on the school. But I had a chance to observe the school, go through the school, and just look at the design of the school. This is one of many. They have a double school they created on the south side, Lucille Brown Elementary School. And recently they created a new school called Hickman High School. But one of the things these schools have in common, and one of the people have noticed them, is that I'm beginning to develop a paper that called How the Public Schools Are Now Being Changed from Public Schools to Public Prisons. These brand new schools, they look so much and have been designed so much like prisons. I want to know what is going on with this. Why have there not been more forethought in terms of the structure designing the schools? Because we all know, sociologically speaking, how things are designed can have a human impact on human beings in their thinking and their behavior. This new school has been built exactly like a prison. Is this another future sophisticated way of imprisoning our kids or getting our kids prepared for the pipeline so they become more comfortable when they go into so-called prisons? Susie, I'd like for you to take a stab at that, because I'm talking about in Richmond. I know at schools in Richmond, they look like prisons. Not only do they look like prisons, yeah, but they have little cell bars numbers on the outside of the school. Mm-hmm. Each section of the school, they have a little number, like a cell block. Can you speak to what's going on as it relates to the designing of these schools, Susie? And is there an impact and perception they may be having on our young kids and our people in general?
Well, basically, I can't speak on it too much, but I have been past several schools that did give you the illusion of it being a prison, even though if you're not from the area, that's what you probably would have thought it was. But I think one reason they're doing that, too, is that basically they're going to be taking out youth, and this is going to be a way that they feel like they can have them in line for what they want them to do, and without doing what they would like for them to do and everything. This way they can, they're going to be making it more easier for them to be able to accept these places because they have already become familiar with it. But other than that, it's something that I'm pretty sure will be coming out more in the public.
Now, to our listening audience, this is Missing Pages of History, and we do want to deal with these issues and these missing pages and talk to truth to power. Hey, Emmanuel, can you give me your scenario of the types of schools I've been building in North Carolina in contrast to what we had just stated in Richmond? And give me your take on what you think, what's behind the designing of schools that look more like prisons than school?
Well, here that's not quite happening. The schools they're building here look more like college campuses, more like hospitals. Very small one, does a lot of concrete work. We have a school I just visited the other day, high school, a little town called Roseville, North Carolina, and it looks better than most black colleges. Look like a black part of Duke University or whatever. It has elevators, 6 stories high, sitting on about 100 acres of land out in the suburban area, you might say. I've looked at the inner city schools 4 or 5 years ago, and they had bars on the windows. They were painted prison gray. Some were painted a prison blue color. I've seen that in elementary and high and basically middle schools. But the high schools are more prevalent because of athletes. They want the athletes to come there and make sure they got facilities fit for them. But that's what I've seen so far. When something like that comes about visually, we need to take pictures, post it on our website, Instagram, whatever, and we can do, again, we can do YouTube also. We can. That's quite a project for us to, you know, for us to undertake. And I guess, again, that's missing pages of history, that how the schools had been built before they got integrated. When we went to school before they got integrated, our schools were like spread out. I went to a high school that the principal and dormitories, everything was on this school, but it was separated, segregated. No this, no that. I mean, wings, very nice. It looked better than the white school, basically, because we had the land to put it on. And the big thing was it was put on and not too far from a trash dump. I didn't like the location because you smelled the trash stuff, you know, but that's where they put it at. They put our schools in parks, so they don't have to pay a lot of money. That's what they did in Baltimore. They put the schools in parks. They took some of the park land and some of the golf course land. They donated, basically, we have the golf course and put a school there. You don't have to pay for that land or that much for that land already laid out, already been, you know, basically leveled to a certain point, already got utilities there and everything else. Plus, the golf courses have sprinkling systems, so you already got the plumbing there. So it's a little more less expensive. So, but again, you had a black mayor who understood, mainly the black, you know, city council just about. Baltimore was about 6 to 7% black when I was there. So, yeah, it was done a little bit different. But now you can see the change, what's going on, because, again, an interesting stat is that when your child gets to the 7th and 8th grade middle school, they start counting, they build prisons according to those particular kids. It's because 80% of those kids will have some type of interface with the police or the law enforcement before they get the age of 18. Now, that's a high number. That means through truancy, doing certain things at the school that they figure, you know, it's not trivia. It should be trivia. Back in the day, they put you in a corner, put a dunce hat on you or whatever they did to you, or you walked down the hall or you picked up paper, you policed the grass. But now they call the police, and there you go. You're down for nothing, for zero. when we fought that particular time, I had little skirmishes. But then got, they called the minutes. The minutes for boxing gloves, 16-ounce boxing gloves, and they put that on you, and two people, they would get together, and they would just, battle it out. That's where it was done. Or they call your parents, and they come pick you up. But nobody got suspended. Nobody got suspended. So this was going on. Now they have alternative schools now. When you get suspended a certain amount of time, they go to an alternative school. Magic Johnson has one here. So these are the kind of things you look at education and what's going on now. And again, where they're building the schools at now, I think this school must cost over $20 million, the school they built. That's enough to build basically two or three schools. But it's on farmland that African Americans used to own one time. They took the land from them basically through taxes and telling lies and everything else. They took the land, taking 2 and 3 acres at a time for paying taxes. So this kind of system is rigged, like I said before. It's rigged against you to make sure the powerless stay powerless. And the ones who have the power and the, you might say, the privilege, they still want to control what's going on in the educational system. That's what they're going on.
Briefly, Emmanuel, in terms of this school that you're speaking of, what is the socioeconomic background of the students who are going to be going there?
I have no idea. But they're coming from surrounding counties. Basically, the city of Raleigh is quite a distance from it. Like I said, the towns around there are very small towns, 7,000, 8,000 people. That's all. They're proud of us African-American students in because of the athletic prowess. They will bring them in by buses, whatever, to make sure that this becomes a powerhouse. As for it, it's built from a school that was in Florida. Florida has powerhouses. African-Americans make them what they are. And they hire mainly European coaches taken care of. Again, the power. You got a school with athletes, about 80-90% African American, and mainly all the coaches. They have 6 coaches. 4 of them going to be white, maybe 2 blacks at the most. Should be the other way around. They make sure pay the X amount of dollars, become assistant coaches basically for other schools, give them a few dollars more to bring these black recruits coming from other areas. Don't care about the academics that much. They want to make sure this school becomes powerhouse in high school. This is a major thing that they're doing now. Just like in professional football, coming straight down to an NCAA football, you see 80-90% of the schools, dominant white schools, have African-American players and all basically mainly white coaches. So this is a conspiracy. This is a system that's rigged in every form you can think of, from the prison system to the sports world to the business world, everything.
Okay, now we're going to go to Philadelphia, Brother McHale, in terms of this question of how schools are being designed like prisons. I'd like to hear your take on it.
Okay, McHale, Philadelphia.
Is there any commonalities up in Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, where you can see this trend?
Yeah, I can see not only the trend there, I can take it a little further back. Now, I grew up in New York City, and when I went to school, and this is we're talking about 30, 40 years ago, the schools already had numbers. So I remember going to junior high school 45, which I think was called John S. Roberts, but I'm not even sure. Went to public school 133, and that was in East Harlem way back in the day. So the pipeline thing was occurring back then, but it wasn't just the design of the school. It was the actual circumstance we were coming out of. It was based on immigrants, and prior to the black community coming into that area, it was an Italian neighborhood before, same problems, high crime. They were new to the country, and before that, the Irish. Now, those with a good, strong, helpful background in terms of family and community would go on and maybe be able to accomplish junior high school and complete high school and maybe go to City College or get into some other institution. But without that background, it was a big problem. I was watching a very interesting documentary on the Somali refugees who have come to the Western Hemisphere since the Somali government broke down about 20 years ago. And this was a particular community existing in Canada, I believe Toronto area, but they're experiencing the exact same problems the African-American community has experienced here in the United States. And they feel that it's the low expectation of the teachers that is a problem. Also, they've noticed that once their community became rooted and they had their own neighborhood, an amazing amount of guns and drugs came into the community. And now they're, a lot of them have become professionals, but they're developing a gang problem because of the lack of jobs and the disappointment in what they thought would be a very good experience coming to America. So not only is it a matter of school design, but there are a lot of other factors that you have to keep in mind and consider. It doesn't seem to be working out for people of color in the Western Hemisphere to a large degree. I heard a report in this, the other day, and it expressed that 40% of black men, that the black man in America, in Northern America, North America, is approximately at the same place he was during the Civil Rights era. And what they're speaking to is that while we do have Oprah Winfrey's and the various athletes who make great money, a couple of rappers and some singers that make a lot of money, we have a few millionaires, the general population is about at the same point it was in 1962.
Okay, and Jill, your response to my last question.
I'm not sure if she's available at the moment.
Okay, we'll move forward. To our listening audience, this is Missing Pages of History. For those who don't get a chance to hear the entirety of this program, we always encourage you to go to our archive, which is www.blogtalkradio.com/missing-pages-of-history-inc, and there you'll find a host of programs that we have produced, and you're always welcome to listen to them and share your feedback with us by emailing us at missingpageshistory1@yahoo.com. As always, if you'd like to support our program, feel free to send any and all donations to Missing Pages of History, P.O. Box 27782, Richmond, Virginia, 23261. We'll continue to move forward. I would like to come back to Mr. Joyner in terms of Detroit and this case of dealing with the water and emergency program that is taking place in Detroit. Emmanuel, in terms of what's going on in Detroit, we recognize the city has filed for bankruptcy. And there's a fear that this will be a pattern, this will be a model for future cities that are going to bankruptcy. In terms of this whole question of the bankruptcy and this water incident, how could have all of this been avoided, given the fact that most jobs are now being carried out outside of U.S. borders? How would you address that if you was an economic advisor?
Well, number one, being an economic advisor and advice, I would say, first of all, taxes, to a certain extent, to have what we need to have. That means roads, police department, military, fire department, people that work for the government. This comes off of taxes. And you can't have wars and deduct and don't have taxes and don't increase taxes. You have to increase taxes when you have war, because you can't stay status quo when you have a war. It bends all the money. This country, per month, to run this country like you run your household, is $350 billion to $400 billion per month. Multiplied by 12, it takes $5 trillion a year to run this country. Taking in $3.5 trillion to $4 trillion, you can't run the country. It's very simple. You cannot run and have a war at the same time. People have to understand exactly what you need to run this country with. And again, when you got people want raises in the military, getting promotions, disasters, all this bringing from that 350 minimum to 400 trillion and to 400 billion. And this is what happens. So understand the math, what it costs to run this nation with. You have cost overrun on the Department of Defense. people making overtime. And like I said before, you got people retiring from the police department, from the FBI, from all departments, you know, Department of Interior, Commerce, they're retiring. So this is money. Then you got to pay the person taking their place. So now you're paying two people. You're paying the one that retired and the one that took their place working. Out the same money? Impossible. I can't remember people can't get that through their head. You have to raise taxes. Taxes run a capitalist system. Two things on a capitalist system, labor and taxes. To have the benefits to ride your car on the road down the street out there, it takes taxes. To keep them roads, the infrastructure, it takes money. Well, you got people ripping off the taxes. Detroit filed bankruptcy because the money got taken out of the city by the hierarchy. The hierarchy took the money, like most large cities. They get paid six-figure salaries. They retire, go to another city, get another job, and draw on a check from this city. This is what they do. This is how this system is rigged. Why Detroit filed bankruptcy? Because 30% of the people who were mainly Europeans from the beginning, Detroit didn't have no black man, didn't have nobody black. It was a vibrant city. But again, you get 9, 10 layers, 12 layers of management making six figures. Then they leave. They retire, and they take them six figures with them almost to retirement. They retire 60, 70, 80, and 90%. They're gone. They have drained the city. The city has been drained. They take the money out because they want one that went the administration with the highest ranking salaries. Check it out. I already did research on it. Every large city, small city, do the same thing. From New York to Philadelphia to Baltimore, all of them do the same. Chicago, all of them do the same. They make money and they get up out of there. When you get the job, they want to pay you $30,000, $40,000, $50,000. But they're making six figures. They leave. Affirmative action, which they had for 400-some years, affirmative action, they had it for a long time. Well, we're getting a little piece of it for a promotion standpoint. So we only go but so far. We're not the CEO or the CFO or the COO. We're not none of these people, basically. If you see, you see one or two. That's all you're going to see. And don't make the money that they're making. And they surround themselves with assistants, associates, you know, all kind of, I'm like, what are these layers? What do they do? They don't do anything. Then nepotism takes place. They hire their buddies.
All right. Mr. Emanuel, I'm going to have to stop you right there. We only got less than 3 minutes, but I did want to listen to you just to give a glimpse of 1 minute for each one of y'all in terms of what Ms. Pages has in store for them coming up on the upcoming TV program. I start with you, Brother Mike. Brother McHale, can you just give us a 1 minute quickly in terms of what the people can expect from your upcoming program?
Well, for the TV show, we plan to bring in quite a few people from the Philadelphia area. I'd like you to get a further look at how the city is and who the people are making a difference here. We have a few programs that are very interesting and very revolutionary in terms of their approach to solving our problems. But that's what Philadelphia is going to bring to the television show.
Excellent. 1 minute, quickly, Mr. Emanuel. What can we expect for our North Carolina future programs coming up?
I'm going to stick to the subject matter, missing page of history. I'm going to talk about black history, its heroes and other troublemakers, and I'm also going to talk about how the system is rigged. I'll be talking a lot about that. And again, historical events I'm going to talk about, mainly, which has been largely white history, and we are virtually non-existent in the history books, basically. So I'm going to try to bring these up to people and individuals, and if I talk about the socioeconomic system, which is totally rigged, I'll be talking about that.
Okay, on that note, Emanuel, we're going to have to stop you. I'd like to thank our listening audience for coming to our homes today. You can always catch us every other week, 12 noon, Sunday, Saturday evenings. You can always write us at missingpageofhistory1@yahoo.com. And if you'd like to support us, please send all contributions to Missing Page of History, P.O. Box 27782, Richmond, Virginia, 23261. Until next time. We thank you. Let's strive to always to go forward ever and backwards never. Let's do the right thing by filling in our missing pages of history. We thank you for allowing us to come in your home today.